estate services, Lavazzi and Boob1.co.uk present the 20 Megabyte Doctor Who Podcast.
Hello and welcome to the 20 Megabyte Doctor Who Podcast, episode 401. I'm Adam, and please accept the Rod of Rassilon. And here's... Sorry, I'll do that correctly. Accept, therefore, the Rod of Rassilon. And here's Mary Lang.
Have you got a screwdriver?
Dobie Melrose.
Yes, K9. The doctor said you to tell me to shut up. How dare you?
And Kirby Bartlett Sloan.
There's nothing more useless than a lock with a voice print.
Now, the reason why I was chuckling a little bit is because I was just randomly going for episode one, trying to find, wait for the subtitles to stop on an appropriate line that I could say, and that's what it stopped on, except, therefore, the Rod of Rassilon. I thought it was just so perfect for this show.
That's what she said segment, yes.
Well, a long time ago, when we did this, we discussed this, with Ben was on and Robert, my quote was, are you Doctor?
I know. I find that quite irritating, to be fair, that particular thing. Right, let's see if I've got an audio. I think that will definitely be recording. I think I've already checked that other one, so we'll carry on then. This week, listeners, we are going to be reviewing Back on the Journey, The Rod of Rassilon. No, I do apologise, the Invasion of Time. And I don't want to dwell too long on certain parts of this story, because it's a six-part story, Kirby.
Yeah. Oh, Lori's posted as she said it was a four-part, and apparently she somehow watched it in four parts from where maybe it was on delusion.
Well, she wouldn't have missed too much.
She saw all of them. They were just broken up weirdly, but she posted saying four, so I got pedantic on her.
Unusual. The episode begins with a spaceship going through space and the Doctor appearing to be in the front of three cones, or bullets, or something.
Coneheads.
Master?
Yes?
Are you watching the DVD version? Yes. If so, are you using the enhanced special effects or the regular special effects?
Well, regular, I think. Why?
Oh, because it's available both ways. Oh. Although the enhanced, I have trouble watching the enhanced on my PC. I don't want to say C-O-M-P-U-T-E-R. For some reason, that just gets all juddery and everything. Mm.
That's 30 seconds of my life I'll never get back, isn't it? Right, anyway, so yeah, the Doctor is acting very oddly in front of these three bullets, cones, or whatever they are, while Leela is just mooching around the TARDIS, having a word with K-9.
And with her new
costume.
Her new outfit, which she only wears in this one story.
Yes. So, yes, the Doctor appears to be agreeing to do something for these sort of creatures. And, like I say, acting a bit odd. So, yeah, and of course...
Esther?
Yes.
Two things. Did you notice that he signs with a question mark?
No.
Watch his hand.
No.
I was going to ask about that.
Yeah, he signs with a question mark. And he also pockets the, I will say, the biro. Even though we don't call them biros here. He pockets the biro.
Yeah, he takes the pen.
Yes.
Well, it's just like being in the bank. That's what everybody does with bank pens, don't they?
Yeah, we have to ask for ours back at the post office. Like, can I have my pen back, please? Mm. Oh, sorry.
So
we no longer call them biros?
Well, they are biros, but yeah, pen, biro.
Whatever, pen. Anyways, and then we're on Gallifrey with, is it Andred, the chap that goes off with Leela at the end of...
Yeah.
The quickest romance ever.
My God, yeah, last 5 seconds, sorry.
Well, I actually was watching closely this time, particularly since I was watching with the infotext and the commentary, and Louise Jameson points where they put in a little bit of romance throughout the thing.
You need to be watching
for it.
But you have to look really close. There was one where he was injured and she was obviously attending to him, but I didn't actually see anything that meant that she was going to stay behind.
No, yeah, I didn't either till the last episode.
They hug at the very end of episode 4, just before the Santarans appear.
Do they?
Yeah. And you see it again at the recap in episode 5.
I didn't notice that.
Riveting. Anyway, right, so we meet, and then the, what's that chap who always plays sinister people in Doctor Who? I can't remember his name now. Good grief. Anyway, play somebody sinister.
Elton Johns.
That's it. He's got both of his eyes for this story, though.
Yeah.
And the Doctor plots a course for Gallifrey. Leela has a swim in the TARDIS swimming pool, which...
they did make use of that leisure centre quite well, didn't they?
It was an old hospital, wasn't it?
This was next door to the hospital.
The
hospital would have been too cold to swim in. It had no heat. But this is a building next door.
So the TARDIS lands in the Panopticon, and they've drawn a lovely spider's web on the floor to make it look like it was a spider's webby place. And a couple of lovely blue sort of weird chairs that somebody could have a nice lounge. Oh, they're loungers, really, aren't they, rather than chairs? If you really wanted to lounge in the Panopticon, you could use these chairs quite nicely. Of course, they're quite aware that the TARDIS has arrived because they make some sort of announcement that a certain capsule has materialised in that particular part. I was just about to say something else. Oh, what?
They also make note... They state that there's only two Time Lords who are unaccounted for.
Yeah, you know who the other one is, don't you?
Yes.
The Rani.
Yeah, John.
Right.
So, yes. And on this occasion, the Doctor's allowed to bring his companion to Gallifrey. Doesn't have to say, can't take Leela to Gallifrey. So on this occasion, because he couldn't take Sarah, could he? But he's taking Leela.
But I think because he's acting... crazy, I think that it can be excused, you know, that he's just being crazy by bringing his companion as well.
And being so demanding, you know, they get a chance to say, oh, you should have brought her with you.
He does have her kicked out of the city,
Yes, because I think it's for her own protection, really.
Yeah.
Now, yeah,
or because he told the writers, you know, he didn't want many scenes with her.
Yeah, that as well. Barusa has regenerated.
This is the best Barusa.
Yeah, he's very suspicious of the Doctor. Doctor does a very good job at this point hiding his true intentions, and he really does sort of boss everybody around. But what I've liked about Mr. Baker's acting in this particular story and this episode particularly is that, looking back on it, you watch a second time, you really the acting that he's doing in trying to sort of shield his mind from. You know, these people that are obviously monitoring what he's thinking.
The Vardens.
The Vardens, yes. His acting conveys that. God knows how, but he's able to convey him being the Doctor, being sinister, and shielding his mind at the same time, which is quite remarkable. But nobody agrees with me, so I don't care.
Yes,
I'm right.
I agree completely.
So you're always, obviously, we all on the Leela side, we completely trust him, even though all we've heard of the story so far is him, you know, being evil. And again, the idea of an evil Doctor, or he brings this character to life in this story, which is absolutely fascinating. Anyway, basically, the Doctor is going to become president. I don't remember the bit where the president died. Do you? No. Okay.
No, he was. They proclaimed him president at the end of.
I forgot that. Yeah, the Mancunian. No, that's a different one, isn't it? No, Deadly Assassin. I think is a story.
Deadly Assassin. Yeah. There you go.
I forgot about that.
He was proclaimed president, and then he left.
Okay. Anyway, he comes in and he gets sworn in with the rod of Rassilon and the sash of Rassilon and the Rassilon of Rassilon. And the crown of Rassilon, but the crown of Rassilon hurts his head a little bit. And there was a certain sort of when he put the crown of Rassilon on, had a bit of the Jesus thing going on for me.
It did look that way, yeah, with the white gown and all
And that's how it ends. He starts collapsing, of course. He has been rejected by the coronet, isn't it? The coronet of Rassilon rejected him, But Barossa said, no, he is president. Doesn't matter whether it's rejected him or not, he's president. And, yeah, so the cones are keeping monitor of this. The doctor asks, I forgot about this little bit, asks for a room made of lead, lined in lead. So he doesn't say why, but it's fairly obvious why, really. It's because he wants to go somewhere where he can rest his mind from shielding his thoughts from these Vardan people. Yeah, so... And there's that scene in there where he tries to open up the secret passage with a sonic screwdriver and looks straight into the camera and says, not even a sonic screwdriver.
Yeah.
Which annoys some people, but not Debbie Melrose. And if it doesn't annoy Debbie Melrose, then it doesn't matter.
It doesn't annoy me.
Anyway, so, yes, he's a bit more himself at this point. God knows how, because he is still shielding the thoughts. And he goes back into the TARDIS. But obviously there's a bit of a let's overthrow the new president thing going on with the, Time Lordy soldiery things. Doctor goes in and K-9...
Guard, isn't it? The Citadel Guard.
Yeah, but he has a conversation with K-9 and K-9 plants his sucker on his head. I don't know if he sort of psychically gives K-9 some sort of instruction.
And, Master?
Yes?
In that same scene, you can clearly see the 2x4s that the TARDIS console is made up.
Yeah, it does show up, but that's only because nowadays we have, you know, even these sort of, these raw bits of video, which if you, obviously when they went on television, you wouldn't have noticed that, but because you can see these on these high-definition screens now.
I did not notice it when I first saw this on a TV. And
it was blatantly obvious, yes. So I mean, Leela goes and meets that quite attractive woman with the big brown eyes, whose name eludes me. She's the security. Rodan. Who?
You're talking about Rodan the time lady?
She's the security chief, essentially, isn't she?
No, she's in traffic control.
Oh, is she? She's very nice, very attractive.
They were considering her as being the companion.
Yeah.
Obviously, they went ahead with a time lady, but just not her.
Yes.
But she was sort of a proto-Romana.
Yeah, what they could have done, though, with that is just brought in Mary Tam with her name and said she regenerated for the episode. No?
Yeah, I don't know why they didn't. Maybe they'll discuss that in the extras for the next
I reckon
story.
It so as Tom Baker could finish Romana's time on the show with that "you were the finest Romana of them all" line. I think that was probably why.
Maybe they didn't know what they were going to do at the end of this. Mm. Because Leela's leaving was so... last minute, so quick.
They wanted her to stay on, so she just refused. But they mm-hmm. left it open for her to stay in. But anyway, listen to last week's show, and listen to the Louise Jameson interview, amongst other things.
Well, I listened to the interview.
Okay, but did you listen to the whole show, Kirby?
What?
Did you listen to the whole show?
No.
Well, what was the point of me putting all that special stuff together at the end of it then, Kirby? I just waste my time on this show, don't I? I beg your pardon.
I have been so busy at work.
Oh, you've been so busy at work. I have had a blooming back injury all week. I tore my back before doing the show last week.
How are you doing, actually? How are you
doing with that? It hurts. But I'm all right. I'm sat down at the moment, so I can't really do myself any damage. So I've lost the plot now. Where do we get up to? So the doctor's acting oddly, and they're trying to get into the TARDIS, and then K-9 stuns a Time Lordy Gallifreyan soldier, shall we say. And then he starts going around these sort of what look like engineering areas and blasts a console there, which I think disables the shield that protects the Gallifrey from invaders. This is all obviously arranged by the Doctor. And at the end of the story, the episode, does an evil laugh. Which was quite amusing. I don't know what joke they told him to do that sort of laugh, but it was quite a good one.
I mean, he's probably laughing at the silly way the Vardans look.
Yeah, the tinfoil creatures.
The tinfoil creatures. This is the worst monster.
Yeah, even
I recently rewatched the Creature in the Pit, And these are worse than Creature in the Pit.
Are they? Well, cheap. BBC people were delighted. Funny how they move around with swinging cameras, which was quite, I thought was quite interesting. Yeah, they were very, even in the 1970s, would have looked like tinfoil creatures, because of course they were. Anyway, so they get invaded by these tinfoil creatures, and Leela, the Doctor sort of manipulates things, so Leela gets banished from Gallifrey. Leela's not too sure what's going on here, but she's still, even though she's a bit cross with the Doctor.
Well, she has unbending faith in him as well. That's
even
what
then.
I like. Yeah.
Even then she has, which I like. Unbending faith. So they traipse off through a quarry, and
I just noticed something.
What?
I just sliding the through various scenes here.
Mm.
When the doctor's in, I believe it's Bruce's office.
Mm.
There's what looks like a model of a BAFTA. It's like a face. But it's like half finished, but it's not really.
Yeah,
a
BAFTA. I saw that. Yes, I saw that.
It's like, oh, I want a BAFTA, but here's
didn't
a fake
find
one.
That at all interesting. But yes, I did see that.
It was
interesting that
office.
Yeah, it's interesting to the sinister bloke whose name always I forget is wearing one of those old compact things that women used to have in the '70s. You know, that flips open and it's got a mirror and a little puffer thing in it on his little front. No? Well, he is. Shut up. Right, so, let's say, Leela's been banished. But she's managed, because it must be quite cold out there in the quarry. They've given her a nice cloak to wear. And then we meet that bloke. Remember the android invasion? The one that starts twitching, the android that starts twitching and falls over the cliff. He's the leader of the tribe. And there's a bit of which he threatens
Max
Leela.
Faulkner.
And, beg your pardon?
Max Faulkner, yes. Yeah, He's
a stuntman,
in
yes.
lots of things.
I know, but he's done some proper acting in this episode. But it gives,
yes,
obviously...
He was Ambassadors of Death, Monster Peladon,
yes.
Planet of the Spiders,
yes.
Justice of Daleks,
yes.
Thalgard.
Yes, shut up. Anyway, yeah, so that, and obviously the fact that Leela is able to sort of do a little bit of wrestling with him, shall we say, enabled him to show his stuntman skills in throwing himself in a somersault and landing on the ground. But,
yes, he was also the fighter ranger in Hand of Fear.
Thank you for that. So anyway, that's
my job.
She quickly befriends the tribe, and I think at this point wasn't when the Doctor got his lead-lined room. Meanwhile, K-9 comes. Oh, sorry, actually, somebody comes in and zaps Barusa. Oh, it's one of the tin-four creatures. But by the time just before the Doctor gets his lead-lined room, he really does look very stressed, with a strain of trying to, you know, keep his mind in a shielded mode. So anyway, so he goes back into the TARDIS and he puts the Coronet of Rassilon on the head of K-9. But just as his plan comes to fruition, Andred comes in and threatens to shoot him for treason or whatever. Was it treason? I think it was treason, wasn't it? No? Well, he was. And, yes, of course, that was a great cliffhanger for a whole week. How did the Doctor not get shot on that one?
There were lots of good cliffhangers on this one.
Yes. Anyway, he didn't get shot because he told K-9 to stun him, which he promptly did. And I love the lighting in the TARDIS console room. It's really quite different on this episode.
I thought weapons don't work inside the TARDIS.
Yeah, but these are Time Lord weapons. A different thing altogether.
It's a different law, yeah.
Yes.
In fact, they can open it. And yes,
the people who invented the TARDISes must be able to find a way of having a weapon work inside them, I would have thought.
And it's an old relic TARDIS, you know. It's like...
Yeah, it's got a console made of wood.
Oh. Anyway, so... moving on. So, the Doctor wins Andred over with a jelly baby or something like that. I don't know. Was that the smarmy Time Lord bloke? He's so sort of creepy. He sort of hangs on to any side that appears to be in power, doesn't he?
Castellan Kellner is the character's
Castellan,
name.
Yeah.
I love how he's always like wringing his hands. And...
Yeah,
I know,
it
but
is.
He's a great character because he starts off.
Excellency.
Yes, but he starts off being all sort of creepy, to Barissa, then he's creepy to the Doctor, then he's creepy to the Vardens, then he's creepy to the Sontarans. He's
really an opportunist, good. You know?
Yeah, yeah. I do quite like his character, actually. Anyway, so Leela sort of gets some rebels together in regards to the tribe in the quarry. And the Doctor goes in to try and fix the sort of shield that let the Vardens in, probably to stop anybody else getting in. So he goes in there with his sonic screwdriver and gets a bit of dirt on his face. And and then the tribe and Leela try and get into Gallifrey. And I'm just skipping through here.
Surprised by how easy they get into Gallifrey.
Yeah, but they're actually on the planet, aren't they? They're not.
Gallifrey City, sorry. Yeah, that's what I meant.
K-9 gets dressed in the rod, sash, and coronet of Rassilon. Does that not necessarily essentially make him president of Gallifrey at this point?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I like they don't get ideas of grandeur, he says to him. I like that bit.
So, anyway, the lead line room is created, and the Doctor has somewhere he can have his own thoughts and plot. And then the Vardens turn into people. Because they managed to sign some actors up for this particular episode.
Very boring people.
Yeah, but it looked like they've come out of Star Wars, and whatever the costumes they're wearing.
Central casting.
And then K-9 sort of vanquishes them and banishes them, and the Doctor sort of celebrates. And then
watch for the hug. It's to the right.
Well, that might be just a celebratory hug. I think that.
Yeah, that's all I took it for.
Yeah. Now, was that the end of episode 4?
They didn't give them enough screen time together to develop any chemistry.
Yeah, indeed. So that's episode 4. Now, this is a point where you think, right, that's the end of a little episode. Now we've got a two-part story set in the same place. Although this is, of course, a six-parter. But that's how it felt to me. They really did. That was the end of the invasion of the...
Yeah, that's it.
Tinfoils and the beginning of the invasion of the Sontarans, which is fine by me. So, for me, this is a two-parter. And Brucer still doesn't trust the Doctor at this point, I don't think. But I do love the password.
Suspicious old Brucer in this one.
I think he's wise to be. But I do love the password. It's reminded me of sort of Harry Potter situation, getting into the... the dormitories.
Hello, Humpura.
No, he didn't say that. Kirby, what was the password?
What, you mean... That was way back in, like, episode 2.
Yeah, and then yep. Bruce used it.
There's nothing more useless than a lock with a voice pad? Yeah.
There we go, Kirby. Well done. That's one. Then Bruce used that in episode 5, because I think it was him that set it in the first place. So... got there in the end, didn't we? Like I said, so Castellan starts creeping around the Sontarans, and of course the Doctor tells Leela how to disable the Sontaran, but he said kill the Sontaran essentially by putting the knife in its probe vent. I'm not sure that was supposed to kill him. I think it's supposed to knock him out, isn't it?
Back
of the
neck. No,
it kills them.
It kills them, does it? Okay.
Yeah, that kills them.
You would have thought, though, at some point that the Sontarans would have thought a good idea to put across that probic vent would be some sort of mesh. Which may would have perhaps let the air in or out, but stopped the knife or any other potential.
You know, in the history of sci-fi and all, that there always has to be some vulnerable point.
It's essentially the Achilles heel, isn't it?
Yeah.
There's one scene in episode 5 where the Sontarans are running along and one of them is Stuart Fell. And
did he? Poor old Stuart.
He almost falls in the... in Alan Gallifrey, and then of course he also falls in the bathroom, and which unplanned.
They all trip over Leela's leader's stick as well. They're going through the corridor at that point.
Now, where you were talking, I lost my place. Right, what happens next? Right, so they're all running around. Leela's back, and obviously the Doctor's able to sort of more or less reveal that he's got a plan, and
He sort of
Brucer doesn't want to give the Doctor the key that he's after, so he gives him the wrong key. What's the key for? Like, is it the key of Rassilon by any chance?
The key of Rassilon, yeah.
No one has touched, no president has touched since Rassilon touched it.
Well, there you go. He must have touched it, though, because he put it in the lock of the drawer.
No president.
But he becomes President Brusa in the Five Doctors, does he not?
Yes.
But he hasn't touched. Anyway, so the key.
What is the, does the key still exist after the gun?
I don't know, but the fact that he's got all these keys on the wall, again, that reminded a bit of Harry Potter. No, Harry Potter came after Doctor Who, but the fact that they had all these keys.
Well, seeing that the Centauran commander became the first barman at the Leaky Cauldron.
Oh, well done, Kirby. No extra points, but you get a ding of the bell. Well done. No, and I've got
and to me, he's the better of them. I didn't like the bald Tom Barman. I liked the first one.
Started off that quite well by coming up with an interesting fact, and then
he was a proper barman rather than creepy bald guy.
Went off on a tangent talking about barman. Shut up. So, for these first few scenes of the thing, the Sontarans have their helmets on and stuff like that. So, the Doctor and I think Barusa leg it into the TARDIS. And they sort of basically go on a little, let's sort of run away, and then we have the dark-eyed woman, Time Lord, security guard person, doing some engineering work on the TARDIS console, and again we see the fine woodwork, the mahogany woodwork, sprayed silver, on the corner.
I loved. Well, I'll get to it when we discuss our opinions.
So the episode ends with the TARDIS going all over the place. The camera's going all funny because Castellan's sort of pulled a lever.
They're in a dark star or black star or something, aren't they?
And that's the cliffhanger for. Oh damn! I pressed the wrong button.
God.
The cliffhanger for part five, as we call it. Not episode five, part five. Doctor gets out of it. I can't quite remember how, actually. How did he get out of it?
Well, he freezes the TARDIS in time.
And then the Sontaran and the Castellan enter the TARDIS console room while the Doctor, Leela and Rodan and everybody else, Barusa, whoever, who's there, start sort of basically hiding in the deep depths, the sort of labyrinth of the TARDIS rooms and things. And of course the gap-toothed Sontaran is rather weird looking, and the way he talks is really quite funny with his lisp and everything. Slightly off-putting, actually.
They obviously only made one Sontaran mask.
So they keep running around the same corridors over and over again.
I love that.
It's a good use of the same corridors.
Yeah.
that's what I wanted the Journey to the Center of the TARDIS to be. I was so disappointed.
What, using the same bits of set over and over again?
I wanted to see brick.
The brick again.
I didn't. Redecorations and all that. Anyway, so like they go around and around and around and around and around. There's a point in which Barusa's reading an old Daily Mirror, which has the Titanic thing on the front cover. And then they're in the what's like an old hospital sort of ward with the curtains and stuff, while the Sontarans and the Castellan are looking around. And
those rooms also doubled as their dressing rooms.
And there was a scene actually there where Leela and I can't remember his name. What's his name? Eldred must live. Eldred must live. Who's got a little bit of a sore arm. So she does sort of half cuddle him while she helps him through a few corridors there. So maybe that's a hint. And she's almost grabbing his hand as she leads him through the same scenes over and over again. And there's a bit of jungle as well down there. Which is quite interesting.
Yeah, they wanted to go to Kew Gardens for that, but they didn't have the budget.
And there's a couple of times in which the gap-toothed Sontaran keeps taking his helmet off. He must quite enjoy that particular bit of acting. He does it a couple of times. There's an art gallery, and then... Oh, good Lord. I'm just sort of paraphrase. Oh, yeah, and then they grab hold of the Castellan, or Leela does.
I get the feeling you don't like this story.
I do, but I'm... I'm just trying to. I just don't want to linger on it.
You're just coming across that you're not overly impressed. No, I just don't want to linger on things too long.
The Doctor ends up with a humongous. Be quiet. The Doctor ends up. Hang on a sec. With a humongous gun. It's almost as big as the one that Rose had.
He took the time Rodan to make it.
Yeah, but the Doctor doesn't use guns. Everyone does he?
No.
No. Or maybe only on Gallifrey. I don't know.
Well, but he gets to throw it off later by not remembering anything.
Right.
And then, of course...
The wisdom of Rassilon.
Yes.
The Sontaran ends up with some sort of... what looks like a bit like a hand grenade. And there's a bit of a sort of standoff between him and the Doctor. I'll wait for the machine to stop running at the moment. Bear with.
Master?
Yes?
The art gallery scene... There's one scene where you... Where the Doctor appears at the end of it, that was the scene that they used in the episode where Clara was being dropped into all of the Doctor's lies.
That's sorry, knocked me bell. That wasn't a ding for you. I just knocked it. Well done, Kirby. Anyway, there's a bit of a standoff between the Sontaran thingy and the Doctor, and there's a big explosion. The Key of Rassilon hits the deck, and does it then dematerialize? I can't remember now.
Well, the last shot is just the key laying there.
We don't see what happens after that.
We don't know what happens.
The Sontarans disappear and the Doctor's unconscious. But the Doctor has succeeded and beaten the Sontarans. And then my DVD won't play anymore, so I'm going to have to do it by memory. What?
Why won't it play?
It's been awkward. I think there must be a mark on the disc. I bet it's doing the same thing
mine does, and it's having trouble with those extra special effects. It'll probably start up again in a second.
No, it isn't. I'm going to say what happened. Right, so the Doctor wins and says, "Come on, Leela." And she says, "No, Doctor, I stay," and holds hands with Eldrad Must Live. Oh, Android, sorry. And then... we have this then. If you're going to stay behind, you must look after this, rather pointlessly giving a canine.
No, canine opts to stay.
What's the point of that? They said obviously there was a big hoo-ha because canine was leaving Doctor Who and all the fans wanted him to stay. So they shoehorned in the little scene at the end where he's got a crate with canine Mark II and the look into the camera. And the
I love the smile. Hey, that's his Superman moment. Leave him alone.
Master.
Brilliant. That makes yes,
remember Burby.
Exactly why I love him.
They never intended to get rid of K-9. They had that all planned.
Why?
Why not?
There was no point to it. K-9 might as well have just stayed on the TARDIS and let Leela go off and have this fake sort of unbelievable marriage with Eldrad Must Live. Or maybe it's called Andrid and they called their little kid Eldrad. I don't know, but blimmin' heck. It's quite interesting that the story before Leela, that had a companion in it, being the Hand of Fear, had a character called Eldrad, and then the last one Archie's in has one called Andrid, which sounds very much like Eldrad.
They sound completely different.
They do. Anyway, right. So that was...
Kirby's right that they planned all along to replace K-9.
Yeah.
Because the model that we're seeing in this story is a model that they couldn't do a lot with.
Right.
So they came up with an enhanced one, so they had to get rid of this one.
But nobody would really have noticed the difference, though, would they?
Adam, did you not notice in some of the scenes they're practically shouting over the fact that K-9's being steered somewhere?
Mm. Yeah.
Yes, but what I'm saying is, even if they change the model, because they want a better, quieter model, none of the viewers would have noticed it was a new K-9. No? Yes, I'm right.
Well,
so shut up.
It opens up more story options to have a K-9 on Gallifrey.
Anyway, before I talk about what I think of the story, there's nobody's talking to me. I've got a thing on the right hand side of my screen that says Top Chat. Nobody, I've got people watching, but nobody's talking to me. I've got a bad back and everything. I'm on blimmin' Zapane tablets and nobody's talking to me. Anyway, right. The Invasion of Time is actually quite good. I quite enjoy it. There's a couple of mildly irritating things and things you can pick up on for comedy purposes. But it's a pretty good story. It's one of my favourite six-parters in Doctor Who, actually. I do like the way it's broken up into those a four-parter and a two-parter. I think it keeps the pace going. I love the creepiness and the what-the-hell's-going-on-with-the-Doctor scenario with that, which, I mean, obviously we know after watching it what happened. When you're watching it for the first time, you really are, what's going on? Is this actually the Doctor? Is it somebody pretending to be the Doctor? Either way, it was really, really good. There's just a couple of weird things you think, that's not going to happen. She's not, although she could have had a secret affair when we didn't see all that stuff happening. But that was the only thing that tainted it for me, really, the sudden sort of, oh, she must leave because she's fallen in love with this broke.
You remember she was really attracted to someone once when I can't remember what episode it was. She was like, he's beautiful. She wasn't quiet about her attraction.
No,
this was very subtle.
It was subtle. But one thing, she didn't want to get killed off. That's basically why they shoehorned that in. And also, I think it probably would have been a better. But bear in mind what she was originally.
Being a warrior, she should have been killed off honourably.
In a way, but I think, you know, if they didn't want to kill her off, the best way of helping her leave was for her to join that tribe the friends that she met, you know, outside the Citadel.
But she would stay with, because they're more like her.
Right. Maybe kill off the leader of that tribe and make her the leader. That's probably would have been a better way for her to leave.
Well, he died. He got killed by Sontaran.
Well, there you go then. They might as well have done that. That would have worked better for me, as far as Leela's character goes, I should say.
So I assume those people. Go ahead.
No, I'm just saying that. But other than that, I really like this story. I think it's a fab story. What did you think about it then, Kirby?
I remember watching this back in college when I was first watching Doctor Who. Loved it then. Love it now. I really like the concept of the brick corridors all looking alike and weird stuff like that inside the TARDIS, because the TARDIS could have anything inside of it. It's just fun. And one thing I do not understand, I'm looking at the email that I sent back when in December of 2014 when we were putting together our list of best Doctor Who and worst Doctor Who. For some reason, I have this one listed as my number 3 worst Tom Baker. The only reason I think I said that was because I hadn't really seen everything. Because I still haven't seen all of Tom Baker. My for the worst, I have Invasion of the Time, number 3, Megalos, and Underworld. And I disagree with having Underworld as worst. Now, when we finish the journey, we're going to do best and worst again.
Oh, good lord! I'll have to take a bit of preparation.
Should I rewatch everything now?
No, shut up, Dan. That's definitely not
happening. Because I'm looking at this list and I have none because I couldn't come up with any because I hadn't seen everything.
Okay.
Back in 2014.
No. Have you done? Is that it for you then? Have you said what you think?
Yes.
Good. That allow me to. I've pressed the appropriate button on YouTube now, and I've actually got what people have been saying. I didn't have live chat switched on, so I couldn't actually see what people were saying. So I retract my grizzling.
You thought everyone wasn't
published. I retract my grizzling. Laurie Nick says, "Have a bad cold, so I'm waiting for the soothing tones of the podcast to device me from my stupor." That's what she says.
What?
That's what she says. Lillian Robin, rather sarcastically, I detect, says, about time.
Correct or something.
Lauren Nick said, Daily Motion, but yes, I saw the whole thing with the enhanced special effects.
Ooh.
And then Lillian Robin said, the story is fun. And Ian Kirk says, how can a society of time travellers be invaded by surprise? Lillian Robin says, I'm talking to you. Well, sorry, I couldn't see that at the time. And then Ian Kirk says, the Gallifreyans are a keen conservative society. Were they not afraid of some more of Leela's tribe showing up in chain migration? They would not have even give Sarah Jane a tourist visa. Ian Kirk says, Kirby will have to read out these comments if Adam can't see them. And then I got a message from YouTube that says, welcome to live chat. Remember to guard your privacy and abide by our community guidelines. Well, I did. All right, then. So, Debbie, what did you think of this episode?
Well, I've never seen this. So, first,
really?
Yeah, first for me, this one. And I love the fact that it was six episodes, as you say, but it was distinct split between the stories. I liked that. And it kept me going because, obviously, I'd watched three, and then I had to catch up with the other three today. So I watched them all in one go, and it didn't lag, it didn't drag. It was just good fun, chasing through corridors, getting, you know, hitting the Sontarans in the back of the head, and everybody having a good time. The only thing that I really struggled with, because obviously I knew she was going to leave because of love, was finding the romance between her and Andred. That was the one thing that let me down, was Leela, who's so physical and emotional, not singing it from the treetops that she was in love with someone, just holding her hand out and going, I'm staying with this guy. And I was like, no, Leela, you know, you've been more attracted to other people, you know. But that was the only thing that I could really say I didn't enjoy about it. I actually really enjoyed this. As a finale for Leela, I thought this was brilliant. And I really loved the running through and through and through that room all the time. That was just such a fun display of how distracting and confusing the TARDIS can be. And the fact that Leela left them in the bathroom instead of the president's suite or something, that was hysterical. You got lost. I didn't get lost. You gave me the wrong directions. You got lost. Admit it. That was a good fun. And there was a lot of fun involved in this one, as well as history and makeup of Gallifrey. So it was nice to have a bit more of a information about Gallifrey and the way that they sort of have become so, we'll just let them go through our system. They're on their way to defeat someone else. When Leela first met Rodan, she was just basically watching traffic flow through near in the vicinity of Gallifrey and just letting them go off to whatever war they were going to do. And I thought that was quite good to see that you're supposed to be an unemotional Time Lord. I don't want to be an unemotional Time Lord. That was fun. So I really enjoyed it.
Hey, right, brace yourself, everyone.
I'm brave.
What did you think of it, Mary?
Well, I've seen parts of this story before, but I've never seen the whole thing all the way through. So it made a lot more sense seeing it all the way through.
Well, would do.
But I was having difficulty because the story starts strong. It's very intriguing. And we've got the Doctor acting, it seems, totally out of character. And so, I'm pulled along. But as the story progresses, it seems to get looser and looser.
I had that trouble the other day about a bit of looseness. I don't know if it might have been.
Kind of making some of this up as he goes along. And I find out, you know, to my dismay, that that's true. He actually is throwing in things, you know, just because this is a story that had to get written up in like 10 days. So three guys got together and wrote this thing up because it had to be like a last minute replacement for another story that was going to require way more settings and costuming and production than they had the budget for. So they had to come up with something real low budget that they could do. And they only had 10 days to do it. So I think it shows that, the story does start out strong, intriguing, interesting. And you've got actors in there that are doing a terrific job. But as the story goes on, I feel like it starts to fall apart. Lots of things are happening for which there's no follow-up or explanation. And we finally devolve down to that last episode where I don't think they knew what they were doing. I think I would just run around, run into that room. Okay, run into that room a little bit. And whatever comes to mind, just say it because, you know, we've given up. We can't write anymore is how the last episode comes across to me. And another thing that I was feeling very strongly is that this show is kind of turning at this point from Doctor Who story into Tom Baker starring as Doctor Who. Because with the way he was vamping through some of these scenes and taking charge in most of the scenes, right, and even breaking that fourth wall a couple of times to talk to us.
Yes.
That big close-up at the end with the big smile. I'm thinking, oh my God, this has become Tom Baker's show.
Yes.
It's not so much the Doctor anymore as it's Tom Baker starring.
Some people have used the term the Tom Baker comedy half hour.
Yeah. I mean, that's the way this eventually progressed into, which I think did a great disservice to some of the excellent acting that did take place during this. I think Louise Jameson And the guy playing the Castellan and the actor playing Barusa, they were all so good that they were about the only thing that kept this anchored to being a story that you really wanted to stay with. But I think Tom was getting completely out of control. So, like I said, it started strong, but I think it just kind of fell apart the farther along we went till we had nothing but the runaround last episode. And I don't think that those scenes that are supposedly inside the TARDIS, I don't want the TARDIS inside to look like that. That's really boring and ugly and dirty. And I want the inside of the TARDIS to be magical and glorious, you know, fantasy rooms and all that kind of good stuff. I don't want it to look like that. So that last episode kind of soured me on what the interior of the TARDIS could look like.
You wanted it to be a bit more Willy Wonka.
Yeah, like I said, more fantasy.
Or to quote The Hitchhiker's Guide, old mattresses?
So it started good for me, but ended up souring me.
Oh, okay. I'm sorry about that, Mary. Right, so need to briefly, before we move on to other feedback, go back to last week, because we had some 400th episode messages coming through, which I forgot to do.
Yes, and we forgot to remind you.
Because, yes, exactly. You forgot to remind me, didn't you?
Yes, I did. I'm sorry.
Now I've got to find them. It's a problem. Ah, here we are. So is it, how would you describe... how would you all describe the 20 megabyte podcast in a sentence to those unfamiliar with it? Crap, says... Oh, no, that was wrong. Lauren Nick says, I'd like to see Alan T. Butcher keep it to one succinct sentence. I wouldn't. Wouldn't be Alan, would it? Jeff Waddle said, first time for everything. And then a little smiley emoji from Lauren Nick. And Ian Bissett said, not actually 20 megabytes. Laurie Nick said, how many bytes does it take to get to the center? Reese Barton said, how many bytes does it take to change a light bulb? Rob Lansdowne said, I've never heard such arrant nonsense, said the Third Doctor once, but I'm not sure he was talking about the podcast. Jeff Waddle said, a veritable smorgasbord of opinions based in the Isle of Wight, but encompassing views from around the globe, with various pet appearances as well, and a quiz that is unfairly stacked in favour of the host. How can it be in stacked favour? Oh, don't do it!
Yes.
Face. Debbie Melrose piped up, not really welcome in this particular part of the conversation, because it actually was for the listeners, but never mind, I'm only joking, Debbie. If you want a cozy listen to people bickering about all things Who, then we're your podcast. You're really getting this bicker thing into your head, aren't you? We don't bicker. What it happens is, as I've explained on several occasions, I'm right and you lot can't put up with it. Mary Blitz Lang. Especially bickering with the host over his idea of a correct answer. And I remind you, Mary, of my previous statement. Joshua Dybal said, it's so funny, I love you, Adam. That's a bit more like it. Graham Sheridan says, 20 megabytes is all it takes to get hooked. Aww. Billy Kirkbright said, the slickest podcast I've ever heard. I don't know why you're laughing sarcastically for, Debbie.
I'm not enjoying it.
Jeff Waddle said, you don't listen to any many podcasts, do you?
He's responding to Billy.
I love that.
Betty Kirkbright said, Jeff Waddle, quite a few. Jeff Waddle, I like Dr. Carl from your neck of the woods. He's brilliant. You're going off on a tangent there, Jeff. We're talking about this show. And Laurie Nick said, I'm sure that's code. Billy Kirkbright, Laurie Nick's many Aussies don't use the term brilliant. It's awesome, cool. Some even say filth. Alan T. Butcher said, Jeff often says filth. Alan T. Butcher, international International Network podcast coordinated from the Globe Centre of the Isle of Wight, which is embarked upon comprehensive and closely studied pedagogical assessment of the Doctor Who phenomenon. What's that mean? Laurie Nix with an emoji of a character holding a love heart balloon. Billy Kirkbright says, my favourite podcast. That's my real sentence. Do I need to get out a bit? Yes. Alan T. Butcher, Billy Kirkbright, whilst being a pragmatically accurate phrase in this context.
Now you know how it feels, Adam.
I am afraid that falls significantly short of syntactically being sentence. I think there was something missing there. The deficit is, of course, in regard to the lack of any form of verb. Alan T. Butcher then goes on to say, do I need to get out a bit? Which we've already said yes to. And Billy Kirkbright said, Alan T. Butcher, yes. Like, do I need to get a life? I do love the 20 megabyte Doctor Who podcast, though. It has to be said. Yes, it does have to be said. Ben Shoveler. Missing a Ben. I agree with that. That's probably the best part of it.
Yes, I agree too.
Have you back, please, Ben?
Well, Ben can't be bothered to do a show on a Sunday evening. He's got better things to do. Brendan Moore said, "Srite."
That's an old Ben saying.
Yes. Andy Nunny says, "Domineering pedantry with a touch of feminine elegance."
Oh.
I don't know where that feminine elegance is coming from there, Andy, but never mind. Rhys Barton said, beg your pardon?
Nothing.
Rhys Parton said, that's Kirby Bartlett Sloan. What about the rest of the team? Andy Nunny said, Rhys Parton, I'm now got the image of Kirby Bartlett Sloan that I don't want.
Oh.
Rhys Parton said, you inflected it on us.
Yes.
I said, someone remind me about this for episode 401. Because that's all the stuff on there. Lauren X said, I will hopefully be using some of these answers when I hand out ribbons at Galley and ask people if they know about the podcast. You can write the following thing on all these ribbons, Laurie. No, never heard of it. Chris Miller said, mostly harmless. So that's a little bit of a catch-up on the comments about the 400th episode. Thank you for doing that. It'd be nice if we get that sort of response to our normal feedback requests, wouldn't it?
Yes.
Talking of feedback, yes.
And it was very, very nice that the one newspaper had the article.
Yeah, it didn't actually go in the newspaper, it only went on the website.
Yeah, people have been asking me for like, oh, is it in the actual? It's like, no, sorry.
Mm. Yes, and I don't think my trip to Newport to do the radio interview ended up doing anything. Well, I'll email the incumbent, Lucy, I think her name is, who did the interview about it. She probably forgot to do it, to be fair. She seems like that sort of person. Don't mean that in a horrible way.
No.
She's a very busy lady, I suppose. I went in. So it's the first time I've been into Isle of Wight Radio, and the office was packed with people. It's usually really quiet when I go in there. So it was quite strange. Right then, this. Furthermore, with feedback, I think, did you request some, Kirby?
Of course.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Here it is. Laurie Nix says, we don't need no stinking budget when we've got absolute Doctor Who gold. Top-notch acting except for a painfully slow Sontaran, plot twists and turns. Excuse me. Rodan and her screwdriver line. Andred's tight trousers. Banter with Barusa. The inside of the TARDIS. Baker breaking the fourth wall, not for the last time. I've missed this sort of Doctor Who. Yes, Leela's reason for departure is tacked on and we know why. But I've always loved this six-parter, tinfoil, aliens and all. If anyone disagrees, may their bag of jelly babies be devoid of orange. Orange is not my favourite flavour. I like these sort of blackcurranty ones myself, or the strawberry ones.
I like the lemon ones.
I don't. Kirby Bartlett Sloan, this is a six-parter, may I pedantically point out. Lauren X says, Kirby Bartlett Sloan, sorry, the way I watched it online, they combined the episodes and uploaded them as four parts. I corrected my comment. Kirby Bartlett Sloan said, Rodan, let her figure go in later years. Rodan, let her figure.
Rodan, let her figure go.
God's sake. And there's a picture of a strange monster.
That's the Japanese monster called Rodan.
Oh, I see. Everybody would have got that, wouldn't they?
Yes, they would have. Mm.
Kobe Bart Sloan said, Derek Deadman, the first Tom barman in Leaky Cauldron and Store. First Tom the barman. Oh, I take it there's been more Tom the barmans, have there?
Yes, there's been a couple.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Maybe they regenerated. Joshua Dyball said, love this story when I watched it as a boy. Wish there were more stories set deep in the TARDIS. Had high hopes Journey to the Centre of the TARDIS would do a better job, but it was a disappointment. So that essentially was it for that line of feedbacking, or feeding back. Let's see what we got through the email system. Ooh, well, let's see how I'm going to get around this one. Bear with me just a moment, the technical stuff I have to do at the moment. Right, so this is the first bit. It goes a bit like this. And it's a bit quiet, bear with.
It's approximately 6:40 on Sunday evening. I'm sitting here and I've got my glasses, which are the ones I'm wearing my head. It's still January, so still 5 days to go. The Invasion of Time, no doubt, Alan T. Butcher will say to closely studied essay into something or other. I'd like to challenge Alan one day. Submit your feedback as audio, one take only, or better still, come and do it live on the show. I wouldn't even then realise how much pain and agony you put poor Debbie Melrose through. Anyway, in the age of time, I can be talking about this a few, probably 3 years ago when we were doing with Earth, when we were on the podcast. It's a very interesting one because it's a two-part, six-part story. Now, what I don't know is how this is actually advertised when it was first broadcast, because, you know, would the viewing audience have thought, well, hang on, it end of part two, and it looks like it's just coming to the end of it, and not know what's going to happen, and you've got another four parts coming of, in a way, a completely different story. So no doubt, Kirby, you could find that out. Actually, Kirby, I was thinking about you.
Oh, you poor thing.
You are lost. You could be a cricket statistician. You'd be in your element working on test match special or something like that. Tune to the Cricket Social. Listen to a guy called Andy Saltzman, who is a comedian and cricket statistician. You'll understand where I'm coming from. Invasion of Time, of course, the first Doctor-only story, no companions. Poor Sarah Jane being dumped because she can't get a Gallifrey. And who knows, we missed, because after I think you've heard about it, you would want to go there. But I think it showed what a very powerful performance Tom Baker did. I mean, this was before we got into the Tom Baker comedy half hour at the end, when he really was just playing for the last of shame. Also, I think this is the best portrayal of Bruce we've had, because this is the one, you see what Bruce was like in the past, you understand his relationship with the Doctor. I think the later ones, and the ones before this, you don't get that, you only get them as they were. This is where you get the history, you get to understand what it is they did, how they worked, and a lot of what they did that, very Machiavellian, behind the scenes, and that's a word Alan Dick, which we're proud of, to make sure that things happen the way they wanted to. And this rightly goes down in the history of the annals as being one of the classics. It really is one that stands up, one that deserves rewatching. So I think you pick up a lot on it every time you watch it. I listened to the 400th episode one. I mean, I'm proud that I was, for a while, I was part of it. It was nice to be mentioned by people like Jeff. And listening to the memories, listen to, Kirby, of course, he's had to be mentioned his spreadsheets in there, so he knows exactly when he came in. He'd probably tell you what his underpants color were at the same time. Debbie, quite humorous.
I know when his are.
Adam came along and said, Andy, I thought, great, what's it going to be? It's going to be my rapier-like wit, my incisive comments as I hit the very peak point of the episode, or the way I kept winning quizzes. No, of course not. It's when I got spaced out on meds and alcohol. That's my second operation in the first week this morning. You make one mistake, don't you?
Yes, thank you, Andy. That's Andy Nunny, everybody.
You had one job.
Yeah, I had to put the volume up for that one. It was a bit quiet. But thanks, Andy, for sending that in.
And Andy would provide feedback quite a lot, like the way he's doing now.
Yes.
But he came in as a regular. Let's see. Of course I know when everybody...
Be quiet, Kirby.
It's on the spreadsheet.
I thought it might be.
In February 24th, 2015.
Mm. Right, Alan T. Butcher said, I'll put my trousers on then. I did once... I did once submit my feedback in the way Andy suggests. Invasion of the Dinosaurs, I think, for various reasons, ended up being read three times on two separate podcasts. Anyway, back to feedback. We've got this...
Hello, Gentlemen Back Podcast, season Kirk.
Hello,
the Invasion of Time by David Agnew or somebody. This is a story where Leela marries a Gallifreyan because Louise Jameson would rather do Shakespeare than continue working with Tom Baker. At least that's what Louise told Adam last week. Well, I'm not surprised, as he was working for Baker Foil. The Gallifreyans eat Smarties instead of jelly babies. No wonder the Doctor stole the TARDIS and left. The sets are spectacular, as are the costumes, except those outside the city. The plot is far-fetched. A Lord President who colludes with a hostile power and shuts down the government. Such things only happen in science fiction fantasies, surely. I bought an SSD drive for my computer last week. I watched this story on that site that shows adverts, and they showed me an advert for the very drive I had bought, which was bizarre. Has anyone seen a 2006 film called Confetti? I think someone's been pulling my leg, but I will order a copy from Kablam. Next month, we might be recording 20 Megabyte episode 404. How will we be... I can't say this. How will we be able to download that? A little HTML webpage joke there.
Yep.
Bye for now.
Yep. I'm a McGann, but probably not the one you're expecting. And you're listening to the 20 Megabyte Doctor Who podcast.
Right. Deborah, you have some feedback from a certain incumbent.
I do, and I do apologise if all you can hear is a cat yowling. She seems
That's
to
not
be
part of the feedback.
To... Yeah, you were supposed to be quiet. He told us to be quiet.
Right,
yeah.
That is it.
Okay, here we go. Potatoes wrapped in tinfoil or carry on up the Custoberus? Invasion of Time is... Get off, cat. Invasion of Time is, of course, a closely studied exploration of psychological mores, which I hardly need to outline beyond the obvious paradigms of the Doctor having to act as an unconscious element in the mind represented by Gallifrey, and the segue between an initial psychological disturbance acting as a Trojan horse for a more threatening mental problem. It should be noted that this story is often criticised by those that know it was all thrown together at the last minute, but they are wrong, as it is in fact a testament to the brilliance of the creative team at the time, so in tune with the show that they could still bring together such a story with no time to do so. We also learn that Kellner had done some undercover work for the Time Lords in the late 20th century in the face of a Carl invasion, and early 21st century Earth under the Salamander before becoming Castilian. All in all... I'm reading what he's written.
It's it's all Alan's fault.
He's wrong.
T-I-L-I-A-N. I'm just reading what he wrote. Sorry. Castellan. All in all, Invasion of Time is exciting and brave story taking a knife to the hearts of the Time Lord Society. Threatening this with was a precocious and confident move, and perhaps the result is mixed. It diminishes the Time Lord's mythic status, but in the meantime, it provides an extraordinary performance opportunity for the lead actor. It was also great forward-thinking to place Canine on Gallifrey for the purposes of the Big Finish spin-off series set on the planet and the two canines' opportunity it provided. This serial is perhaps four episodes too long. Series just opened. Perhaps four episodes too long, or two episodes too long if you don't like either of the separate stories, or the right length if you like both, or maybe six episodes too short if you think they forgot to show why Leela mysteriously decides to stay with Andred at the end. Next, Doctor Who and the Black and White Guardian show, or right said, I can never say this right, Romana Vortrilunda. I can't say it, it doesn't flow.
Romana Dravatlanunda.
Romana
Dravatnalunda,
aka Fred. Those are my thoughts. Alan T. Butch. Sorry, Alan. I've completely botched.
Oh, thank you, Alan, for putting the Romana Dravatnalunda in there. That was well worth putting in there. We're going to have to actually make Debbie pronounce Romana's name in that fashion for the next few series.
No, I will be learning it properly.
All you have to do is say Fred. That's why I call my oldest daughter Fred.
Your older daughter's real name is not Romana Dravatnalunda.
No. That's where I got her nickname.
What? Oh, okay, I've got you. No, it is not how you got her nickname. I'm sorry, no, it isn't. God, what is the matter with you, Kirby? Right, going back to the time in which your said Fred daughter appeared on the show, she said, when you sort of introduced her.
Oh, is my name. And yeah, so I said, okay, I'll call you Fred.
No, I called her Fred. I'm sure I did.
Oh.
You'll have to go back and re-listen to that. No. I remember it quite clearly. If I've got it wrong, I'll give you 50 points in the next quiz. Listen to me. That she said, don't use my name. And I said, okay, I'll call you Fred. And then she said, yeah, okay, Fred. You go back and listen to it.
I don't remember when that was.
Oh, here we go. That's convenient. It was me who coined the phrase Fred for the said Fred. Right, said Fred.
I once called a mainframe computer that I worked on Fred for the same reason.
Oh, okay. But go back and listen to it. Find the episode. Okay? That's a job for you.
I don't have records when the
call. Here we go. Because you know I'll be proven to be correct yet again. It does get a bit boring being right all the time. It's now time for this week's edition of You Won't Get This One. If I can find a appropriate thingy, is this slick? Yeah, quiz. Where's it gone? Oh, there it is. Yes, well, I was going to look back and to see if there was any previous quiz on this particular tale. I don't think there is. Beg your pardon, Kirby?
There isn't.
Good. So it's just as well I've got these special cards selected.
Oh, no.
From the
way back when we didn't have a quiz.
Okay, you don't have to carry on with that. All you have to say was, there wasn't. That's good enough for me. But you're Kirby, I suppose. It's too much to expect, really, isn't it? Let's see what people are saying on the live feed. Alan T. Butcher said it'll be Romano Dravatlunda in every feedback now for ages.
Just getting you in practice, that's all.
Thank you, Alan. Right, I'll have to break it down for you phonetically, won't I, Debbie?
I'll manage. Don't worry.
I'll give you a clue. It starts off. The first bit is Romana. Okay.
I'll watch her say it. I've got a couple of clips.
She rolls it off her tongue really quickly.
It's a great name. I love it.
I've just googled it on YouTube to just see.
Romana Dravat. Right. I'll break it down. Romana Dravat Nalunda. Go on, say it.
Romana Dravat Nalunda.
Hooray!
And I will write it and actually put it on a post-it note above my desk.
Spelled out phonetically, so you always...
Right then. So, Mary, who do you think is going to be ahead at the end of the quiz? Oh, the question, sorry.
Kirby.
Mm-hmm. I can see a pattern developing here. Debbie, who do you think is going to be ahead at the end of the questions?
Judging by the last couple of times, I better pick myself.
Oh, my God. Kirby, who do you think is going to be ahead at the end of the questions?
Debbie.
Mary, who do you think is going to be at the end, at the other end of the spectrum?
Me.
Okay.
Oh, I hate that.
Debbie, who do you think is going to be at the other end of the spectrum?
Mary.
And
sorry, Mary.
Kirby, who do you think is going to be at the bottom?
Mary.
I hate picking people for the bottom.
Tough.
It's
part of the game. Right.
I know.
Some of us glory in failure.
Yeah.
No, so I love it when you do win.
Yes!
Oh,
brilliant.
I just dropped the card and I've got a bad...
Is everyone on the live feed going to watch us have to call an ambulance?
Really
and the ambulance people...
No, that's only when I get cramp. Right then, first question goes to Mary. Are you ready?
Oh, always.
Right then.
Never.
In what year did Mr. Blue Sky... by Elton Pope's favourite band, ELO, reached number 6 in the UK charts?
99. I'm going to guess 2012.
Debbie knows.
1978.
Smarty Pants, Debbie.
It's one of my favourite songs.
It's one of my favourite songs. I wouldn't have said 1978 because I actually bought it in blue vinyl.
Ooh, lucky.
And it had a very rare thing as well as being in blue vinyl, a blue actual picture cover, because most of the CDs, most of the vinyl singles used to buy in those days used to just have these sort of paper sleeves with a hole in them to see the actual label of the disc. Okay, right. Next question goes to Debbie.
Yep.
What is the precise time when Riversong murdered the Doctor on the shores of Lake Silencio, or Silencio, on April the 22nd? What was the precise time? You won't get this one.
I don't think I will.
Anybody?
It was the time that Doctor Who went out on the broadcast, but I don't know what time that was.
Well, try another guess then.
What time was Doctor Who on TV at that time?
I asked the questions.
7 o'clock.
No, it was 5 p.m. So as that was a you-won't-get-this-one question, the bonus pot points went up quite drastically because you had more points available for it. Kirby, 5.02 p.m., sorry. 5.02 p.m. was the answer, I do beg your pardon. Right then, what was the name of the Kral's home planet in Fourth Doctor story, Android Invasion?
I don't remember.
You don't remember, therefore... Anybody?
Mm-mm.
It was... yes.
Sidon.
Is the correct answer.
I went through my notes on the computer that I still had from that one.
That was,
sorry.
That's fine. That's fine. Yeah. Well done. Okay, there's 5 points in the bonus pot. Nobody played a joke yet, by the way. 5 points in the bonus pot for this question. Which key member... Sorry, I'll start that again. Which key member of the suffragette movement of the early 20th century that eventually helped secure equal voting rights for women in 1928 stole a laser spanner from the Doctor?
It wasn't Amelia Pankhurst, was it?
Oh, dear.
It was a bit of an obvious suffragette.
The way you're supposed to answer a question, Debbie, is Amelia Pankhurst. Not it wasn't, because that sounds like you're saying it wasn't her when it was.
Fair enough.
Okay, so that's right. So no jokers played as yet. The scores are as follows. In last place, with no points each, it's Kirby and Mary. In the lead with 7 points, it's Debbie. Next question goes to Mary. Where did the Absorbaloff conceal his limitation field creator that prevented him from exploding?
Prevented him from what?
Exploding.
Oh, gosh, I don't know.
Therefore, I think Kirby said he knows.
Yes, in his cane.
Yeah!
Is the correct answer. Okay.
Of course it was.
You should have played your Joker.
Well, not for 1 point, he won't.
It doesn't work when you're doing...
Right then, Debbie.
Yes?
In Army of Ghosts, Barbara Windsor appears as which of her famous on-screen characters?
Joker, Peggy Mitchell.
Oh. Is the correct answer.
And you're the only person...
No.
I don't think Mary...
Mary is a fan of Bellenders. I mean, EastEnders. Kirby.
EastEnders, but I don't remember any of these details.
I'll just drop my card again. I'll give a explanation. Not my cardigan, my card again. I didn't need any more questions off that one anyway. Right then, Kirby.
Master.
Which two doctors often wear, or wore, bow ties?
Oh, that's an easy one.
Joker. 2-11.
Well, I can give you a point for the 11.
Oh?
What?
I can give you a point for the 11.
Was it 3?
I would consider what the second wore to be a bow tie.
Well, I think the rules of Trivial Pursuit is that even if the answers are wrong, it has to be what it says on the card.
This is what someone was discussing on the feedback.
What?
This is what someone was discussing on the feedback, that we have arguments with you when you're wrong.
I am wrong. I'm not wrong. I accept that it was, in fact, 2, 3, and 11, but... On the card, it says 11th and 3rd. What
really?
Can I do, Kirby? What I can do, Kirby, is give you the points and leave it at that. And I did give Debbie...
Thank,
a point for
Thank
her
you,
answer
Master.
As well. But yes, that was wrong on the card. Clearly wrong, so I'm not going to... That's ridiculous, in fact. Okay, yeah, so you got the full quota of points for your Joker. Okay. Stupid. I mean, writers of these questions, I don't know.
Oh, there was one time I went to a party a few years ago where we just sat down for an hour and went through those cards and finding the errors.
Oh, the ears? Where do we find the... where would cards have ears?
Errors.
Air oars? Well, is that where you go rowing in the air, like they would in the old airships? Air oars. Right then, moving on.
Incorrect answers.
2 points in the bonus pot.
That one.
Be quiet. 2 points in the bonus pot. Not cot. Name the two actresses who played Time Lady Romana Dravatnalunda alongside the Fourth Doctor.
Oh, I know.
Go on then.
Mary Tam. Mm. And Lala Ward.
You should have done your Joker.
You should have done the Joker.
Should have done, but you didn't. There you go. Here's the correct answer. Right then. So Mary's question.
Did you give her a Joker anyway?
No.
Aww.
Mary.
Yes.
Another crack at your Joker. In Time Lash, the Doctor and Perry uncover a mural on Carfel of which previous regeneration or incarnation, even, of the Doctor?
Ooh, I don't know.
Therefore, we get this tune, and we wait for somebody else to come up with the correct answer.
Don't look at me.
I wasn't looking at you, because I can't see you, for starters. Anybody?
No.
The answer, a bit spoilerific, but the answer was the Third Doctor. Let's see what it says on the card. Oh, it does. Well, but give it a great big explanation, which is a major spoiler, so I'm not going to do the explanation. But the simple short answer is the Third Doctor.
I hear Time Lash is pretty bad.
It's not that bad. I quite enjoy it, actually. I quite like the part of it that involves H.G. Wells, to be fair. Oh, spoiler. Right, so
it's going to be a while until we get around to that one, you know.
Yeah, I've lost where I was now. Was that your question, Kirby? Who was that question for originally?
No. Mary, I'm just going to make a couple of beeps. I do apologise.
That was hang on, was that Mary's question?
Yeah, that was my question.
Okay, right, sorry. What did Debbie say?
I said I'm just going to make a couple of beeps. I do apologise. Isla wanted something heated up and I'm
sorry.
Right,
it's your question now.
Yes, yeah, I'm here.
Oh, okay.
I said I'm just making a couple of beeps, but you obviously
beeps.
Didn't.
What do you mean beeps?
Yeah. I turned the microwave on next to me.
Oh, God's sake.
Are you the Roadrunner?
Meep, meep.
Debbie, your question.
Yes.
In what year did the 11th Doctor and the Tesselector encounter Adolf Hitler?
Oh.
Anybody? Hello, anybody?
Nope.
1939.
Ooh.
Ooh.
1938, but bad luck and well done for having a guess, Kirby. Right. Next question goes to Kirby.
Master.
Who were the alien menace in the Seventh Doctor story, Silver Nemesis?
Who were the alien men? Oh, the Cybermen.
Took a long time to get there, didn't it? But we got there in the end. 2 points in the bonus pot. For this question, who was the first actor to portray the Doctor's nemesis, the Master? Don't all shout at once.
Can't remember his name.
First. I know.
Go on, Em.
Roger Delgado.
There you go. Now I know.
Yeah.
All right, score update then.
I just had a little bit of a brain freeze there or something.
Thank you. Score update. In last place with 2 points, it's Mary. In second place with 9 points, it's Kirby. And in the lead with 12 points, it's Debbie. But Mary still has a Joker to play. And this question is for Mary herself. Here we go, Mary. What yes. cyber device did the 11th Doctor reprogram and name Bitey?
I'll try a Joker here. I'll say the Cybermet.
Yeah.
Okay.
I nearly gave you 10 jokers then. That would have been a bit awkward.
Cool. Well done, Mary. Mary for the win.
Next question goes to Debbie. What Vinvoce device used to resurrect the master are Rossiter and Adams trying to retrieve?
I can't remember what it's called. It's some kind of medical ambulance machine.
Not quite what I've got written on the card. Anybody?
Yeah, probably not.
Anybody?
No.
Okay, then we get this. I should have played that as a you won't get this one, but it wasn't. Right. Oh, hang on. Machine's going funny. Bear with, hang on. Right. So I've got issues with my computer. That's me, actually, but I'm blaming the computer. The answer was the immortality gate.
Oh, that's what the other guys called it. Yeah, that was it. It was some kind of ambulance, but the guy who found it called it the immortality gate.
Be quiet, Kirby. Right, next question goes to Kirby.
Master.
Complete the title. A town called...
Mercy.
No, it's Malice, isn't it? Do 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 do. And 2 points in the bonus pot for this question. Rose realised that something was wrong with the time when "Don't Mug Yourself" by which contemporary band was playing in Pete's car in 1987. You won't get
this
one. You won't get this one. I'll read it again for you though. Rose realised that something was wrong with the time with time when "Don't Mug Yourself" by which contemporary band was playing in Pete's car.
Oh, no.
You know, dear. Go on then.
The Street.
Bugger. Damn.
I had the word "the roads" in my head, and I had to go through a really odd filing system in my brain.
Kirby, be quiet.
Neither Kirby nor I would know that.
Right, so okay, the current scores in last place with 6 points. It's Mary in second place with 11 points. It's Kirby in the lead with 16 points. Is Debbie. And I'll just make sure I'm not on the. Oh, hang on, where do we go up to? Oh, here we are, sorry. Next question goes to Mary.
Mm-hmm.
Rose realised that something. I've done that one, so I move on to the next one.
Yeah.
What is the name of the hospital that the Jadoon transport to the moon as they hunt for Plasmavore?
Oh, golly. I don't remember.
Okay, it wasn't that, but anybody?
I don't remember.
Nobody? Okay.
The Royal something.
Yeah, it was the Royal Hope Hospital. Yes, right. Debbie?
Yes.
Which stand-up comedian portrayed Dr. Malcolm Taylor in Planet of the Dead?
Stand-up comedian. Don't know.
Well, got there anyhow, right? Okay, so let's say
it's one that neither Kirby or I would know.
Yeah, I only found out he was a stand-up comedian after we watched it, and I don't remember his name.
Okay, it's Lee Evans. Is the answer to that one?
Oh, God's sake!
All right, next question goes to Kirby.
Master.
On the next card, sorry. what revelation about the Doctor's people takes place in the War Games?
That's kind of a not very specific.
Sounds pretty specific to me.
What revelation
about the Doctor's people takes place in the War Games?
They're Time Lords, I don't know.
The Time Lords, I don't know.
Yeah, we find out that they're Time Lords in that one.
Oh, okay.
Yes, that they're Time Lords, I don't know. Not there in the end, but yes. Right. Next question is a bonus pot question, and there's 4 points in the bonus pot. In The End of Time, the Doctor is warned that he will knock 4 times, but which unlikely person ends up fulfilling this prophecy?
Oh, I know.
Go on, then.
That would be Wilf.
Ooh, does it say that on the card? Ooh, of course it does.
Well, we'd accept Donna's granddad as well.
Would we?
Ooh. Yeah, you'd accept it.
Deb's trying to change the rules of the quiz. Shall we deduct a point for that?
I'd force you to accept it.
right then, so next question goes to Mary. and it's this. Complete the story title, Mary. Carnival of...
Monsters.
Monsters? No, it's not Monsters. It's Monster.
Monsters.
Do-do-do-do.
No, that's Adam's family.
That's Adam's family. I knew Kirby'd say that. Debbie.
Yes.
In what year did Davros make his first appearance? I suppose that means as in Earth year, not Skaro year.
Oh, 1974? Oh, I was going for 4, 5 or 6.
Right. Anybody?
1976.
No, it was 1975.
Oh, no.
Right, next question is for Kirby.
Master.
What foe does the Doctor come face to face with on Fang Rock for the first and only time? And it's not the Fraggles.
Oh, yeah.
Rutan.
Oop, got my card. 2 points in the bonus spot for this question. Oop. Fraggles. All right. Which member of the League of Gentlemen starred in the episode Silence in the Library? Now, there is a multiple choice on this one. Go on then, Debbie.
Steve Pemberton.
Nice one.
Really?
Yes. I love League of Gentlemen.
So he gets an extra point by not having to go through the multiple
questions. I don't think I've ever seen it.
Okay, the current scores are with one card left.
It's very peculiar.
What, having me having one card left?
No, League of Gentlemen. No.
It is peculiar, but it's quite funny.
It is very funny.
In last place with 12 points, it's Mary. In second place with 15 points, it's Kirby. And in the lead with 19 points, it's Debbie. Next question goes to Mary. Which Time Lord always had a tattoo of a mythical serpent eating his own tail on his or her body?
I know.
You said this was a Time Lord?
Yes, I'll redo the question for you. Which Time Lord always had a tattoo of a mythical serpent eating its own tail on his or her body?
I can see it. I don't remember who it is.
Oh.
I think we're going to go for Kirby, who said, I know.
Ah, but it just dropped out of my...
Oh, dear.
Ah.
Is he with you?
No, I'm not. So I'm... Drop me, forget it.
Pardon?
I don't remember.
You don't remember. Okay, so we go...
Debbie must know.
Nope.
Yeah, so I forgot where we were for this one. The answer was the Corsair.
I was talking to Isla. I didn't really hear the question, so no.
Okay, right, okay. That was Mary's question, wasn't it? All right, then. So next question goes to Debbie.
Yeah?
Martha Jones, older sister, was known as Tish... But what was her actual name?
Oh.
That wasn't O.
Tish. Letitia?
Deborah. Oh, yeah. Marty Pants Melrose returns to the quiz. Okay. Kirby.
Master, it doesn't matter because Debbie's going to win.
Be quiet. Kirby. In Master. Evil of the Daleks, what does Theodore Maxtable's time cabinet contain 144 of?
I don't know.
You don't know. Well, that's not the answer I was looking for. All right, anybody?
No idea.
Nope.
In that case, we play a... Oh, no, we don't. Oh, we try to, but it's... Oh, there we go. Slick. It was mirrors, or as the Americans say, mirrors.
We're not starting.
Or even
again.
The Northern Irish would say "mirrors," or if you're on The Voice, somebody might refer to Ollie as Ollie Mirrors. Bonus spot, 4 points.
Oh, it was mostly a missing story. I don't remember. Okay, what? I remember when we talked about that one, but
no, it wasn't Evil of the. Oh yeah, it was, wasn't it? Yeah, but that's not out. Isn't that not out animated now?
Is it?
Very quiet. Yes, I think it is. I think it's an animated a DVD of that out now. I should have watched it, really. I think I did watch it.
No, I don't think this is the one.
Well, we've looked at it anyway. We've watched. We did. Talked about it.
Well, it was Power of the Daleks is the one that got animated.
Oh, yeah, so it did.
But this is Evil of the Daleks.
Oh, yeah, Evil. They do need... Well, we have still looked at the reconstruction, Kirby.
Yes, we did. Mm. We did do it. It's just that I didn't remember anything.
You're making excuses, which is Reese's job.
Mirrors.
Mirrors. It's a very difficult word to say when it's got so many R's in it, isn't it? Well, that bloke off, Kripke off Big Bang Theory, I'd love to hear him try and say that. Mirrors.
Mirrors.
Right then, sorry, I've lost my report. So that was your question, Kirby, wasn't it? I think.
Correct.
Right. 4 points. Was that a bonus pot?
No, that was Kirby's question.
Okay, so there's 4 points in the bonus pot. For this question, what year is it when the Doctor and Clara encounter a lone ice warrior on a Russian submarine?
1969.
Well, you're funny, it's... oh dear, what's happening here? No.
1972.
Oh, God. No. Which then therefore adds another 2 points to the bonus pot. The answer was, because if you remember that the music was Vienna by Ultravox, it was a bit of a clue as to what year it was, wasn't it? The answer was 1983.
I've never heard of
Ultravox. Mm. So
the
this
answer
is,
was the, what?
Ultravox.
No, what year?
1983.
Oh, okay.
Mm. Oh, of course.
All right then. So before, obviously, one of these is going to be tip the cart a little way, some way in the quiz. Their scores are at the moment: Mary in last place with 12, Kirby in second place with 15, and Debbie in first place with 21.
There's no way for me to win, you know.
Be quiet. The next bonus pot question, which is now 6 points, is this one: who does the 10th Doctor say controlled the army of Meanwhiles and the Netherwares? You won't get this one. Dear. I'll take that as you don't know, shall I?
Mm-hmm.
The answer was the could have been king.
Right.
So another 2 points going to the bonus pot.
Oh, God. My crown could be stolen, Isla.
So here we go. In the world of Doctor Who, what kind of publication is the Examiner?
A newspaper?
Oh, man alive!
No, that's a BBC programme about... that used to be on the 70s. Right then, so the current scores are in last place with 12 points, Mary in second place with 21 points, Debbie, and in the lead with 23 points, Kirby.
Well done, Kirby.
Right. Mary predicted Kirby to win and herself to be at the bottom.
Damnation, why the hell?
Debbie predicted Debbie to win.
Who knew?
And Mary to be at the bottom. Kirby predicted Debbie to win, and Mary to be at the bottom. So the final scores of this week's You Won't Get This One. What are you laughing at? In last place, with 42 points, it's Debbie. In Yay! Second place, with 46 points, it's Kirby. But the winner this week, with 48 points, it's Mary. Right, back to the feed.
Debbie.
Yes?
Debbie.
Oh.
Yeah?
Why? I couldn't believe you wouldn't come in and say the Examiner was a newspaper.
I was about to. I was.
Oh, you were about to. She was about to, everybody.
No, it's all as it should be.
It's all done. Mary won. There you go.
Now, what gets me, before I say about what's coming up on the thread, is that somebody accused me of sort of weighing the quiz in my favour. How is that in my favour? I don't take part in it. I don't understand.
It used to be.
That was a long time ago.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, but we still remember.
Well, but I do want to say that any of these quiz questions that you give us that depend on particularly British celebrities or music, you know, things and all, automatically put Kirby and myself at a disadvantage.
No.
And even with that, Debbie doesn't often win, as we found out just a moment ago.
No, they only put you at a disadvantage. I'm an Anglophile.
Yeah, so you can get some ointment for that, Kirby, so don't worry about it too much. Yeah, so Alan T. Butcher says...
Remember, how many Americans know, like, what the Goon Show is?
Shut up about the Goon Show. Alan T. Butcher said, Time Lash is excellent. I quite agree, Alan. And then he says, James Dreyfuss played an earlier incarnation of the Master than Roger Delgado in a First Doctor story. So, right, let's move on. For the first time this year, we're going to look at some Doctor Who news. Now, if anybody watched the National Television Awards, of which Doctor Who was robbed of awards, mainly because people couldn't be bothered to vote. I mean, if it is voted for by the public, Doctor Who fans. So if you could have actually gone around to actually voting for Jodie Whittaker and Doctor Who, and God knows why Bradley Walsh wasn't nominated in this category.
Yeah, that was a crime. He wasn't even nominated.
He was. He obviously won an award because The Chase won Best Daytime Programme. But and this is the point I'm trying to make. When the creators and the cast of The Chase went up to collect their award, Anne Hegarty had Bradley Walsh on her phone doing FaceTime at the time on the show, and she said, Bradley can't be with us because he's in South Africa. And it was revealed probably the next day that they're filming Doctor Who at the moment in South Africa.
I did wonder at the picture of them all in shorts. I wondered what hot country they were in.
Well, when they said South Africa, I mean, Deb were watching it in the morning and said, well, that's Doctor Who. Then they like filming Doctor Who in South Africa. So there you go. It's nice to know that they're filming it, even though we won't see it for a bloody long time. Right. First Dalek novelizations out this year. The BBC Books is to publish novelizations of the only two classic Doctor Who stories never heard of have to been released. The Fifth Doctor story, Resurrection of the Daleks, and the Sixth Doctor story, Revelation of the Daleks. So that's quite good, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Yes. Mm-hmm. I'm trying to see who writes them. The Two Doctor eventually will be novelized by original scriptwriter Eric Sayward.
Yay.
Wow.
Ah. I think he's doing both of them, isn't he? So I can make
yes.
That's good then, because that really does bring a bit of retroness, because obviously Eric Sayward was... I think he wrote a few of the novels, didn't he, in the past? No? Well, you know more than I would. Celestial Toy Room Annual 2019. The Doctor Who Appreciation Society has released the Celestial Toy Room Annual 2019. There you go. Resolution, final ratings, 7.13 million viewers, still showing up to be quite good. However, the appreciation index is only 80. I say only 80.
Oh, no, this means the end of Doctor Who.
I say only 80. I think 82 or 84 is considered to be quite good, so it's not really that bad, is it? Top of the week was the New Year fireworks display on BBC One, getting 12.27 million. Doctor Who was 14th most watched programme of the week ending the 6th of January. It's not too bad. There was lots of programmes out that week, so good old Doctor Who. Shame we're not going to see it for blooming ages. The Dalek's Master Plan is on vinyl, Kirby.
Yeah.
Yeah. The soundtrack to the Dalek's Master Plan.
Who has a way of playing vinyl?
Well, people with record players. The first scene in 1965, it is to be released on vinyl for the first time. That's the soundtrack. I don't think it's the actual audio from the series. War Master battles the Eighth Doctor for Big Finish. Cool! Yes, we've got friend of the show, Paul McGann, versus, I'd like to be a friend of the show, Derek Jacobi. Yes, Kirby.
That is the entire story of the Dalek's Master Plan.
Okay, thank you, Kirby. We're talking about, at the moment, never mind the Dalek Master Plan.
You misrepresented what it was, so I had to correct you.
Yes, but what it says here is... never mind. I'm not going to get in an argument with you. Right then. Yes.
Yes, you are.
Shut up. This is the trailer for the War Master Series 3, Rage of the Time Lords.
It's you!
It's me. Hello.
It's you!
Coming soon from Big Finish Productions,
the War Master. Rage of the Time Lords.
You've no idea what it's like, have you? To live through war. To watch your home wither and die.
When the entire universe is going up in flames, it takes a true genius to make it blaze even brighter.
Who are you?
I am the Master. And you are about to become a part of something beautiful.
I see shards of time swirling through the sky like spitfires. Battles being written and rewritten. Countless victims. Never-ending defeats. All war is senseless, but this makes no sense. What is this war?
Stop!
And away from it, from all the action, hiding on the edges, I see something you don't want me to see, no. Someone. A man. He's been battered by the storm, but he's holding on, and he is the only one who can help.
Enough!
Big Finish. We love stories.
We almost certainly won't survive this,
but what a way to go.
Oh, brilliant.
Ooh, that
goodbye.
Sounds great.
That sounds amazing.
Goodbye. Yep.
Doctor?
Now, the nice thing about that, of course, our friend of the show, Paul McGann, is in that. What should have happened, obviously, is it should have actually been the War Doctor, sadly John Hurt, who should have been the Doctor in this particular thing. He's not capable of doing it, but it's still going to be fab, because obviously we know that the timeline of Doctor Who is that the Doctor regenerated into the War Doctor to fight the War Master and the Daleks in the Time War. But I'm not going to, you know, moan too much about that. It still sounds absolutely fantastic. And I can feel the excitement coming over from Data in Ohio.
Could have battled the War Master.
Okay, shut up, Kirby. Right then, Hootopia issue 33, the latest edition of fan magazine Hootopia 33 is available now. I think we're up to date there because we've got W. Morgan Shepherd, Mark Shepherd's dad died at the age of 86. So there we go. That's Doctor Who news. Now I'm going to have a look at who won because it's the new year, and I think by now, in fact, it's well into the new year, the stuff they said was on pre-order could well be available to buy. The 13th
Master?
Doctor. Oh my God! I want this.
Master.
Shut up! I want this. It's the 12th Doctor 5.5 or 5.5 inch scale figure, which is supposed to match all my other little figures up there. Yes, you're saying, Kirby, I'm too excited to respond.
Wait, Master, yes? Would that be whowon.co.uk?
No, it wouldn't. It would be my little figure of 5.5 inches. Where's my ruler? I just want to make sure, because I accidentally ordered a much bigger figure of the Doctor. Oh, look, it's 5.5 inches. I must buy that. I must buy it. I wonder if Deborah let me. Oh, I want it. I want it.
Who's the boss?
It's very odd to hear you fangirling.
I've got a shelf full of 5.5 inch Doctor Who's Doctors. I haven't got the 13th Doctor on my shelf. I've got a woolly one, and I've got one that's about, well, it's quite tall and doesn't quite fit with the setup on my shelf.
Take
I
a
want
picture,
it.
Show us.
What?
Take a picture, show us all.
Show you what?
Well, show us what you've been going on about, because everybody on the podcast will be like, what's he talking about?
I'm talking about the 13th Doctor's 5.5 scale action figure with
a
screwdriver accessory.
Yes, currently.
On my shelf?
Yes.
What?
He hasn't got it. He was talking about buying it.
No. To show us everything else that's on the shelf.
Oh, for goodness sake. Right, okay. If you insist, I'll show you my shelf.
Yes.
Anything. I'm trying to do a podcast here, Kirby.
You can do it later.
Well, you didn't say that. You said you're demanding I did it now. God's sake. Right. Okay. Done. Post. There we go. I might have to add the text to it later. It's on there. Back to who won. Oh, the 5.5 scale action figure I wanted.
But all you have to do is step out your front door and go a few steps and you're at whoon.co.uk, aren't you?
Even if that were true, it's Sunday, they're shut. I want one. Anyway, Doctor Who Magazine 534 and Doctor Who Magazine 51 Special 2019 Yearbook are both available also to buy from whoon.co.uk. By the way, don't go in rushing to get the 13th Doctor, because you're not allowed to buy it until I've got it. Just like to say.
Right.
Because I bet can't get there.
I bet it's going to be difficult to get after I've got it. I must get it before they go, because I missed out on getting the first and second Doctors.
Tomorrow.
Be quiet. I missed on getting the first and second Doctors, and then they sold out. So I've got to creep to Deb now to say, well, what that? But she won't, excuse me, she won't allow me to spend £12.99 on it. Maybe I'll have to sell my big Doctor figure to get the money for it, perhaps. I don't know.
I love the picture you just posted on Facebook.
Do you now? I'm a photographer, you know. So, yes, go to whoon.co.uk for all Doctor Who paraphernalia. Lavazzi have an offer out at the moment. If you're a member of their, what would you call it? It's the Doctor Who Club, isn't it? Now, I got an email from Lavazzi. So I did suggest previously for people to join the Lavazzi Doctor Who Fan Club. I think that's what they're implying you should do, because if you go on there and you can get 10% discount on any Doctor Who product by using the code DOCTOR10. That's D-O-C-T-O-R, Doctor, and the number 10 in one word, all joined together with no gaps. And then you can get some discount on things like the Cyberman scarf, says We Will Survive on it, and the Pandorica Exploding TARDIS scarf, the woolly beanie hat, amongst other things like scarves and stuff. So yeah, that would be a good thing. Or just try the code anyway. Oh, I've got a bit of music coming through.
A dog flying.
I didn't want it though, but there you go. I accidentally clicked on something I shouldn't have done.
You click on my link there?
No, what's on your link there?
Oh, I just posted a link to YouTube, Tom Baker answers fan questions about Scratch Man, which was posted on YouTube a couple of days ago.
So you didn't at all get distracted there, did you, Kirby? I seem to have lost my other...
Yes, of course I did.
So anyway, that's that concludes our little sponsorship feed. I keep forgetting to send them invoices. I really do need to get a secretary for this show. As far as potential... what would you call it? Convention hasn't gone very well, because nobody's actually contributed. Well, I've had a couple of people contribute to my crowdfunding thing, so that's unlikely to get very far, but it's still not completely dead. But Deb won't let me work too hard on it, because I'm going to be too busy. She just feels that I would have too much on my plate to do that. Work a full-time job and work a doubly full-time job, doing photography and videography for weddings and podcasting, which she tries desperately hard to stop me doing at busy times. Okay, so where are we now? Well, good. I think it's about time I went upstairs and had a bath. Next time we'll be talking about the Reboss operation. The Reboss operation, because we're into the key time. What's it called, Kirby?
The Reboss operation.
And what does everybody else call it, Kirby?
The Ribos.
It's not a Greek thing. It's a Reboss operation. So that's what we're talking about next. It's a four-part story. You've got no excuses. The fact is, you had about 6 weeks to watch Invasion of Time. So
I've already watched all of the Invasion of Time over the past
months. Kirby, it's no competition, but yes. So next week, that's the 3rd of February, we'll be reviewing The Reboss operation. We'll be seeing the beautiful Mary Tam, the beautifully and late lamented Mary Tam, in the role of Romana Dravatlalunda. In the role of what, Debbie?
Romana Dravatlalunda.
Oh, she's clever, isn't she?
Mary would be able to answer this question for me, because I have no idea. I noticed that that's the same day that the Super Bowl is going to be. Mm-hmm. Is it on at the time that we're recording? Not that I care.
Does it matter?
Probably.
Well, no, I think the Super Bowl is later. I think it's 6 o'clock, 6 or 7 o'clock.
I would imagine it's later.
Yeah, because it's not really late here, so yeah.
I have no idea, except I do know that it's playing here in Atlanta, and
playing everywhere.
No, I think it means the match is live in Atlanta. The
game itself is in Atlanta.
Ooh.
Oh, okay.
Exciting. Celebrities will be there and stuff, won't they? Anyway, so...
There was worry that people weren't going to be able to get here.
And the new Marvel trailer as well. That would be good.
Right.
The kickoff is at 6:30 p.m. our time.
You know, when you get these little hash things and you sort of cook them on the thing. I don't know if it's actually called waffling, but even if it isn't called waffling, that's what you're doing at the moment, Kirby. Next time we're going to be...
I was wondering the time, because some people who might watch us live on the YouTube feed might, if it had been on at the same time as the
Super Bowl,
might have interfered with them.
It won't be, though, will it? What's the time currently? It's an evening game. I've seen a Super Bowl. I know it's dark when they play it.
I've never seen the Super Bowl because I've got no reason to. Mm.
Well, it's quite good. American football is quite an entertaining sport when you can get around to watching it. But I have other sports that take priority over it. But I do, if it's on and I've got nothing else to do, I watch it. It's very, very...
If you're watching it live, you guys aren't going to be seeing it then until like 11:30 at night.
It's very skillful. Yeah, I'm not going to stay up to watch it.
I'm on holiday next week, so I can get away with staying up.
It's a very skillful, entertaining sport. It's a brilliant game, American football. Although a bit namby-bamby because they wear those helmets and padding and stuff like that. But it's still a brilliant sport.
Manly sport.
And you still get concussions.
The skills involved in that sport are amazing. But yes, it's always dark when it's on, so it implies to me that it's probably on after 7 p.m.
Yeah. Oh, I'm on a podcast tomorrow night. I just noticed that.
You really are drifting this week, aren't you, Kirby? Right then, so as of next week, Rebus Operation, Takeda Time. Thank you for listening to the show. Thank you to those who take the time. You really haven't got need to find a life of some variety for watching the show. Glad you do, but, you know. Until then, goodbye.
Goodbye, Fancy Pants.
Bye.
The 20 Megabyte Doctor Who podcast is an APV Services production, sponsored by whowon.co.uk and lavazi.co.uk. We are a proud member of the Doctor Who Podcast Alliance. Doctor Who is a trademark of the British Broadcasting Corporation, no copyright infringement intended.